extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening, watching, being with us here on Extra Time Club and Country. I'm Andrew Weeb with my partners in soccer, Matt Doyle, David Goss. Here, late at night, any brown liquor, boys? I forgot, I spaced on it tonight as we break down big wins in CONCACAF for the U.S. and Canada, as well as Mexico. The top stays the same, I should say. Doyle is currently, probably 2 minutes ahead of us, watching Panama, Costa Rica. Praying Los Canaleros just fall off, just go away, let us have the top three spots. We're here to break down all the results from tonight. If you aren't in the habit, please watch with us right after the games, final whistle of the U.S. or Canada, whoever is the late game. And if you're listening right now, thank you so much for subscribing to Extra Time and being with us on this, as well as Major League Soccer, as we build up to 2022. All right, guys, we're going to go through the nitty-gritty. We're going to break all of this down. We're going to talk about how Anthony Robinson really just wants to be Jedi. We're going to talk about Matt Turner signing Arsenal jerseys after the fact, the number nine experiment with Jesus Ferreira, and so much more. What's the big thought from tonight? Doyle, what are you thinking about right now after the U.S. gets a 1-0 win that was neither satisfying? Like, it was, I don't know, it was in the middle.
It was not bad. It was not good. It was fine. The underlying numbers were dominant. I thought they actually did create a number of really good chances. It's hard to watch a team squander, whether it was set pieces or run a play stuff, squander so much and come away feeling too happy. Like, I want to see a little bit of sharpness and killer instinct in the final third. And like, yeah, I'm glad the U.S. got the 3 points. They're in really good position to qualify. But like it feels like it needs to be better. It definitely needs to be better Sunday in Canada and maybe even next week against Honduras. And it's just like I remember that feeling after the Mexico game. It'd be nice to have that feeling.
It's hard to replicate that feeling. To be fair, I mean, there's some exponential aspects to sort of the emotionality of that. But the U.S. are in second, man. We're not first place in the octagon. We're not the big dogs. That's Canada.
When you say we, you mean you and
exactly,
me, because
man.
David Goss is a Canadian
citizen. He's half and half, probably. I mean, he gets a little bit of credit on both.
My maple leaf flutters. Doyle, you want killer instinct? Here's the facts right now. And this is from my guy, Alex Guangue-Ruzzi. Thank you. I'm stealing from him. Since 2019, some Canadian streaks they've broken. First away win in Honduras tonight in 37 years. First win over Mexico in 21 years. First competitive draw in Mexico in 40 years. First Gold Cup semifinal in 14 years. That was, of course, last year. And then first win over the U.S. in 34 years. That's all since 2019. That's Alfonso Davies, Jonathan David, Tejon Buchanan generation.
Goss is the only one. Goss and I haven't seen all of that, but Doyle has. He's lived through it. He's seen Canada in a World Cup. All right? Not everybody can say that, okay? I can't say that. Dave, Anders, that's not even a flicker.
Doyle actually came up as a big Zaire World Cup fan, I think. That was a big one.
The Zaire and Ceylon were my teams.
Usually we would go USMNT first. That's how we would do it. That's been our bread and butter for a long time, but we're not going to.
We start with
the top of the table. It's the honors,
top,
all right?
Top of the table.
Yeah. They take the first bite. And this is a huge win in Honduras. You said it. What?
Gold Costa Rica. Yeah.
And
Gold
who
Costa
else?
Ryan
who
Ruiz.
Else? He came on at half. He pulled on the armband. It was a beautiful CONCACAF moment. Oh, man.
It still kills me when I was watching Gold Cup with Ziggy Schmidt, and he was like, you know, we brought him into trial as like a 17-year-old in Columbus, and we just like waited a little too long, and then he went to Europe. Still kills me. Brian Ruiz, what a player.
All right, right now with Costa Rica up 1-0, just, you know, and I know you're probably listening later, maybe you're listening live, whatever, but with Costa Rica up 1-0, you have Panama with 14 points, Costa Rica with 12. They are creeping toward that playoff spot. Meanwhile, the top three are pretty secure right now. If it holds, it would be a 3-point gap. Mexico 3 points ahead of Panama on third on 17. U.S. 1 ahead of Mexico, 18 points. And, of course, Canada at the top with 19. Let's dig into Canada. Yeah, Tejon and David. difference makers. The first goal, Tejan just roasts. Just puts a dude in a blender. And if you were watching the Alphonso Davies Twitch stream, which was absolutely magnificent, that is content that I can get behind. I'd rather have him be in the game, but if he's not in the game, like middle of the night in Germany with his dad falling asleep behind him while he wears like lightly tinted sunglasses and does his Twitch stream, which, by the way, has over 200,000 subscribers. Alphonso Davies is a media powerhouse.
I can get him.
Yeah, he, in that moment, he's saying, cook him, cook him, cook him, take him, Tejan. Tejan does it, own goal. They're up. That's the burst of confidence they need. It's in a place that has a lot of, I mean, look, nightmares for them. An 8-1 nightmare. And then what? The goal from David. I mean, the ball from Liam Fraser is beautiful, but the control, the way he brings it down, the calmness in the on-rushing goalkeeper to finish and then solidify this, lock it down, David. This is, I mean, these are arguably the best players in the region.
And this is why on Monday on ETR, I said, Alphonso Davies is a huge loss. Steven Eustáquio is a huge loss. There are still match winners in this team. This team has the depth to get it done, and they have the type of players who have shown that if you put the pressure on their shoulders, they can step up. This was the Tejan we saw in that Gold Cup, leading Canada to a semifinal when he didn't have Jonathan David in the team, when Alphonso Davies wasn't able to play with this group. And this is what Tejan's shown us when he's in an attacking role, and he was quiet throughout other parts of the night. This is a game where it doesn't matter. You just needed one moment and to put them ahead. And if you roll back the tape a little bit on that opening goal, it's Atiba Hutchinson, by the way, who plays that ball out wide for Tejan to get isolated. And he plays a quick one too, I think, with Junior Hoilett. And so that's where you see that little bit of experience, knowing how to find Tejan in dangerous spots and help him out. And Honduras was dangerous in the opening 5 or so minutes. That settled Canada down. That gave them a lead to play off of, because a point on the road is a victory as well. And I think Canada playing with that house money, you're able to calm down. And Kyle Larin went coast to coast like twice in this game and just couldn't square it cleanly. And Jonathan David had done it as well previous to that goal and couldn't get it done. And you could feel the pressure on Jonathan David's shoulders. We've seen it over the last year in games when Canada isn't ahead, when the flow's not for them, of just, he doesn't look as comfortable as he does with Lille. And he's not doing the same things he does. You don't want him to dominate games in ways that's uncomfortable for him. He just doesn't look like the same player. And the way he took that goal was what we've seen in winning a French championship and being a player that Real Madrid, Juventus, Arsenal, everyone is roommate after. That's the type of goal scoring he's capable of.
The speed,
the athleticism.
The chest trap at full sprint, taking a ball over his shoulder. He traps it like perfectly off his chest, directly into his stride for another touch, and then just lifts
touch
it
off
over
the head.
Goalkeeper.
The second touch is off the head.
It's ridiculous.
Where it hit on the chest, you see those like where it's kind of mid chest all the time, where they can have it in a really natural, comfortable spot. This is up close to his shoulder, where he's kind of like curling around as he jumps, lands, and keeps going. It occurs to me, though, you speak of Atiba Harris, he was 1.5 when they last beat Honduras.
Hutchinson.
God dang it.
I think Atiba Harris
if we ever talk about Atibas, I always go straight to Harris. It's just the MLS nerd brain in me. Yeah, but he's 1.5. I mean, he's out here making history of these different generations. I was sitting there watching Tejan do his thing, and I think it was Michael Singh that tweeted that, I can't remember, maybe it was Farhan. Either way, that look, the last call-up of any kind, the first call-up for Tejan, was March of last year. It's crazy to think about the pace that his career has just sort of gone into hyperdrive. Like, he was in and that was the U23s last year in March. That wasn't the senior team. To do what he's done, to be the difference maker he is on this march, we assume, to history, we hope, knock on wood, only Doyle's willing to go out here and tweet it and, you know, start the curse. And have started on this path with the national team not even a year ago, it's honestly unbelievable.
Go ahead.
No, it just shows you, I think, as because we just came through Super Draft and we're at that time of year where it's like we think we know how everything works, and then you have a player who isn't a part of academy, goes to Colorado to play, ends up at Syracuse, but you talk to people and you see the talent, and it's just about finding the right place to develop. And I think Matt Turner said it best on our show, where he was like, once he realized he could blow by everyone, the game changed for him. And then all of a sudden he's at this level. He still needs to learn how to do it consistently, right? He got bodied off the ball a ton in this game, but he knows when he lines up 1v1 against anyone in the world that he has the ability to get around them.
You tweeted, Doyle. I have to ask you. You basically said, look, it's done. I'll say it when nobody else will. Congrats on getting to the World Cup Canada. You don't feel it's too early. Yeah. You feel confident saying this is it for Canada. 19 points atop the group. There's a 5-point gap between them and Panama. Depending on what happens tonight, that could go down to 3, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But you,
it's like, even if Panama come back with a late flurry here and beat Costa Rica, I don't think this Canada team is gonna blow it. They've proved to have just too much attacking quality and too much attacking depth. The midfield has been much more versatile than I think I gave them credit for at the start of qualifying, and the back line has held up. And that was the big question we all had about this Canadian team a year ago, you know, going into games. It was like, yeah, just, it's like they have some scary guys going forward, but if you get at that back line, you'll find goals. And like, they haven't given up many goals, no matter who they've played. And it's not like they've given up a ton of chances either. Like, there was really only one or maybe two times tonight that they were particularly threatened.
Well, Borjan made two of the best saves of the night.
One. He made one of the, like, his
the second one goes right late in the game on Elise.
That was good. Yeah, it was good. But like, either way, like, that is, they're giving up way less than I thought they would at any point in this octagonal. And when you have a really solid defense, a goalkeeper who can make saves like that, they have two goalkeepers who can make saves like that, because Maxime Crépeau, when he got in early in qualifying, he was excellent as well. And then, you know, the best attack on the continent, you're going to the World Cup. Canadian fans, you're going to the World Cup, man. These guys are not going to blow it. They might not win on Sunday. I think they will, but they might not. But even so, this group is not going to cough this one up. They're too good and they're too confident. And John Herdman has been too clutch in terms of the decisions he's made with regards to formation, personnel, tactical approach, all of it. All the boxes have been checked. You're going to the World Cup.
And this game, we've seen every bit of what Doyle just mentioned with what John Herdman's put into this team, but the trust in the depth of this group to start Scott Kennedy in this one, who looked like he was going to be a locked-in starter coming out of the previous round of World Cup qualifying. Then he gets injured. He has not been around the group for a while. You've sort of settled on Kamal Miller, Vitoria, and Alistair Johnson as the three center backs. And then you bring Kennedy into this game and match him up on the side with Elise. As big a challenge pretty much as you can get in this region, and in San Salvador, in all this pressure, and he was able to hold up, and the team was able to hold up. Again, they get a shutout on the road, which is incredible. Vitoria went from, please don't play this guy, to how do we save him for the big games and the big moments? And that's how John Herdman has pushed all the buttons in this game. It was, you know, more from a 4 to a 5 in the back. Alistair Johnson was quote unquote lined up at right back. Tejan really tucked in as that right wing back when they didn't have the ball, because Alistair Johnson can cover for those other two center backs when you need it. And he's been unbelievable in that role. But then when Tejan goes forward, Johnson can fill that space. You can play through him. He can hit deep crosses. He can link up. And as Doyle and you guys mentioned, like, Tejan, but look at Alistair Johnson. The guy was a draft pick a year ago. Like, Kamal Miller wasn't a starter in Orlando. He was a backup left back. Like, all of this has happened, and a lot of it's credit to Herdman, but a lot of it, I think, is credit to the structure that's been built, that there's opportunity, that Richie Larea can go back to Toronto FC as a domestic player where he has value, and then learn a new position and learn a new role and get sold. And most of it goes down to these players of just like, and I think we're seeing it on both sides with Canada and the U.S., of just the pure confidence of these young players that they belong in all these settings, that they're as good as anyone else in the world. And then they sort of continue to show.
Yeah, I was kind of laughing at myself, Doyle, when you were saying, you're going to the World Cup, you're going to the World Cup. And I was imagining how I would receive that if I was a Canada fan. Like, it's hard to receive that when you have as much scar tissue as they do. You know, the last time they were in San Pedro Sula, it was 8-1. I don't want to go back to it over and over. It feels like Instagram reporter here. But Alfonso Davies on his Twitch was like, yeah, we got whooped. Like, but that wasn't us. And I just feel like these guys don't have that same sort of, I don't know. They didn't come up in the same time. They didn't come up with sort of the expectations. No. They didn't have all these things hanging on them. And they also just had more resources. They have more talent. Like, they just, they have more across the board, and they don't seem to carry the burdens of the past. And you can just feel that sort of in the personality of the team, in the way that, you know, they approach these moments. You know, there's not the collapse button that it used to be, like everybody on Canada was rushing to press at the same time, like collapse, collapse, like, you know, give up basically, which we saw in games from this team, big games. It just doesn't seem to be there anymore. And you have to.
No, it shouldn't be. You know, and they had that really terrible moment in the 2019 Gold Cup.
Mm-hmm.
They were beating Haiti 2-0 in the second half, and it all fell apart for them. That was in the quarterfinals, mm-hmm. and they lost 3-2.
16-year-old Davies,
and that was,
you know, leading the tournament in goals.
That was in large part this group. Not completely. Like, there are some guys who have come onto the scene over the past couple of years who have really changed it. But like, Vittoria was there, you know, Alfonso Davies was there, Atiba, Sam Piet, Milan Borjan, Kyle Larin. They were all there. They were that part of that group. So they got a taste of that. And I think, I mean, like, maybe they needed to bottom out like that, in order to play with enough to have that fear, I guess, right? To have that motivating fear to, like, if we don't go out there and
do you think it's
go
fear,
out
though?
To kill.
Is it fear or is it?
Yes. I think every athlete I've spoken to, if they really want to be candid, they tell you that there's a little bit of fear of, like, oh God, I don't want to get humiliated. I don't want to let my teammates down. I'm going to let my coaches down. I don't want to let my country down. So I think having that seed in the back of their heads, like, if we don't go out for blood, we could lose to anyone, has, like, is sort of like underpinning all of this. And like, knowing that experience has kind of allowed them to play with like freedom and ruthlessness. And it's why I don't think that they are going to let this slip. I think they have like, they look like a World Cup team to me. They have too much talent. They have too much know-how. They are just not making the types of errors that suggest this is ending anywhere except Qatar.
They also have more depth. I mean, there's just, and not just depth, but there aren't any, there's no one attached, right? Everyone that plays.
Well, we got one. Plays. We got Daniil Henry got an unattached.
Daniil Henry.
Didn't play though.
That's fair. Okay.
Didn't play in this one. And I just think you look at deepening the pool. Part of it has been winning the battles over dual nationals. I think Junior Harlett's been a big part of that. Scott Arfield as well, like, kind of being that first domino and at times being a part of the pitches and the bids for these players. I also think it's the length now that TFC, Montreal and Vancouver have existed, right? For you to have an Alfonso Davies who can come all the way through the system, Maxime Crépeau, all these players. And then I think that helps open up the bridge that a Jonathan David can take over to Europe. So I think all of that has combined, and the hope is in the future, the CPL will be a part of it and MLS Next Pro and all that going forward of making it bigger and bigger. But you just look at a team where there are no weak spots. So now it's, well, our match winners can win the game because we don't have to worry about what's going on around us, right? For Dero, it was like, yeah, you could win this game, but we'll still probably lose because we have someone who doesn't playing at center back or right back right now. And that's kind of was always the story for this team. And so it just feels like for Canada, you're more complete and you don't have those holes in your team. And Doyle, I get what you're saying. I see it a little bit differently as felt like they rested on their laurels in that Haiti game. And they realized that they needed to attack forever. Yep. And that's kind of what we've seen in qualifying is they have come after mm-hmm. teams except for the first half against Panama at home. And there's one other game, maybe Jamaica, I'm trying to think. Every other game from the opening whistle to the final whistle, they have just attacked teams. And I think that's sort of what you saw from them is like, we can't take our foot off the gas at all. And you're starting to see that kind of push through to this youngest generation.
I agree with you, Dave. It kind of feels to me like they figured out, oh, other teams fear us. Like, they're legitimately, other teams do fear us. The level of attacking power we have, let's thrive on that. Like, it doesn't seem to me like they're playing afraid, like they're playing, fearing the consequences.
No, but when I say they have that fear, I don't want to be taken as they're playing afraid because they're absolutely not playing afraid. But like when you bottom out, like you don't want to experience that again.
Yeah.
Like talk to any athlete who has hit rock bottom, and this Canadian group, a big chunk of them hit rock bottom at that Gold Cup. They like that is a really, really bad loss to take. There was a lot of hype around that team. There like a lot of Canadian fans were saying this is the team to do it. And then the rug got completely pulled out, and the players talked about it afterwards, how awful it felt. And so I think when you have that informing your perspective on what these games mean, that's the right kind of fear to have. And I think that it manifests itself with, you know, doing everything in your power to avoid that feeling yourself or your country ever again. And as you said, David, that means they go out and they attack.
It's the edge deep
down. Do not ever.
You talk about the knife fight. It's like when you open the door is closing. When you open it, I will walk out. Sort of deal.
And let's discuss the fact that we didn't even mention on Monday that Steven Eustáquio, who didn't play in this game, just got signed by FC Porto. If a Canadian player was on FC Porto at 18 who was already committed to Portugal, everyone would have been losing their mind 4 years ago, 5 years ago. Now you've got a guy who's going to start in his prime on that team, one of the clubs in the world, didn't even play in this game, and you still get a win on the road in Honduras.
Meanwhile, Alphonso Davies, the best player in the region, Bayern Munich number legend streamer in the making, might be a better streamer than he is a soccer player. It was that good. All right, Canada, top of the group, or top of the octagonal. 19 points. I'm already talking group. I mean, we're already at the World Cup, Doyle. I've turned the page here. We're there. I mean, if you didn't see Alphonso Davies on Twitch, I'm telling you, his dad was
the second goal too. He's like Johnny.
His dad
you
was
got
falling
it, Johnny.
Asleep in the background the whole time. It was literally the middle of the night in Germany. He was answering questions while wearing a Canada kit. He stretched at halftime. He's a man of similar tastes. It was just wonderful. And look, Canada fans got to be on cloud nine right now. U.S. on Sunday in Hamilton, big game. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. Let's tackle the U.S. though. 1-0. We said in the beginning, Doyle, it wasn't satisfying. It's one of those games where, like, you look at the numbers, you're like, a lot of expected goals. Like, that, you know, in this era, sometimes that can make you feel good, right? But you're not exactly left with sort of like, a lot of expected goals that win as planned. It just was missing that little bit that we seem to be missing in a lot of games.
So, I think that Greg Berhalter actually put his finger on exactly what was missing at halftime when he, you know, he's very good at giving these interviews where he's very candid and perfectly diagnoses what's going wrong. And in this one, it was like they were playing too slow. Those little chip balls over the top were undressing El Salvador's back line every time, but they weren't getting guys in behind. And, whenever they had transition moments, they were kind of sloppy with it. And the first, I thought, 20-25 minutes of the second half, they were really, really good at addressing all of that, and the goal came through that. The last 20 minutes was not as good, and maybe that's coloring my assessment of the game a little bit, but even so, like, even when the U.S. was playing the way they were supposed to play, it didn't really feel like El Salvador were up against it. You know, like there were chances that the U.S. had. Jesus Ferreira should have scored his chance. There were a couple other ones that were, I think, good chances. But it never felt like, oh, man, the U.S., they're about to take this team apart. And I mean, maybe that's a mistaken assessment from me because the underlying numbers have a tendency to be right in the long term. And the underlying numbers absolutely love the U.S. performance tonight. But man, I like it's at times a little bit tough to watch this team.
I think you also look at the underlying numbers and you walk away and say, I mean, you could dominate a game, but if you win 1-0, you're a slip away from tying, right? And so some of the emotion that comes out of the game. I also think you look at a team for the U.S. where pretty much outside of what? Serginho Dest, and maybe Weston McKennie and Musa. Basically, seven of the starters and every one of the subs is not in form. Whether it's because they're not in season, they've been out injured, like Timothy Weyer or like Christian Pulisic, they're not getting playing time. And I think you saw that, especially with the subs. In the 63rd minute, I think, was the first sub. And the tempo of the game really died for the U.S. after that point. And so we came on Twitter Spaces before, and we all said, I hope they start with a high line. I get out, score that early goal, and let that sort of break El Salvador down mentally. That didn't happen. You get the goal. The U.S. jumped all over El Salvador in the 5 or 6 minutes after the goal. That's when Weston McKennie had his wide-open header that he put over the top. They had another chance that led to that header, which Yunus Musa had saved. All of that's in about 5 minutes. Then you start to make subs, and it just felt like the U.S. lost their tempo. Now, in the first half, Greg Berhalter, what he said at halftime, as Doyle said, completely accurate. It's also kind of been the same every game, right? Tempo's too slow, not pressing the way we want. And the tempo part is what's frustrating, because at some point you can keep saying, and I'm fine with it, that these guys don't know each other that well. They don't play together that often. This isn't years in the making for a lot of these players. This is only a couple months that they've gotten to know each other. And it's so many games that it's really been game focused in terms of training and playing. You hope it gets better. But I said in the pregame show that they had to win. That was the only thing I was going to focus on, because I've kind of accepted the other thing, which is I'm going to be screaming every time that Dest or Wea gets deep on the right side to drop it back quickly and switch the point of attack quickly. And it won't happen. It has never happened. It doesn't happen. So I'm sort of trying to accept it and move on. But if you get a win in the scenario like that, what the hell?
Look, it's results based at this point. We said that at home. It's always like that. Like, hey, at home, you just got to win. And, you know, we'll take it any way you get it. Then we get on the show and we're on Twitter. You're thinking to yourself afterwards while you have a drink, and you're thinking, it wasn't there for me at that point. And I guess that's national team fandom in a way, and certainly has been for the U.S. over the last, I don't know, 6, 7, maybe even 8 years. But Greg did diagnose it. He did address it. They did change it. I thought the back into the first half, into the second half, as you said, that was sort of the point where, like, okay, well, this is not the high point of where the U.S. can be, but this is a really productive point. This is where we're going to get 2-3 goals. This is where they'll start to pile up. Jesus Ferreira is going to look at that second chance and be really disappointed. Doyle, I mean, that's one that he'll want to finish. I give him all the credit for the first. He created that. It was a great little bit of movement to drop back and get in the passing lane from Andy Robertson. Mm-hmm. The touches to get into that space. Left-footed shot that was a little hurried. Maybe he could go down and try to get a penalty. But, you know, look, VAR is here for CONCACAF, so at some point, if it's not clear contact and you don't feel it, I get it. You have a clear shooting opportunity, take it. The second one's a bummer, but Greg's word on the back end is, like, he did all the things I asked him for. It was a good performance. Did he finish the chances he wanted? No, he didn't. But otherwise, he helped open up the game for us. And look, we have a quota. We have to say a lot of nice things about Jesus Ferreira here. Those are the rules. We got to follow the rules. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, I thought he had a good game. He did what was asked of him. It's not his fault that Christian Pulisic, the Chelsea player next to him, had a really poor game. It's not his fault that there were times where clear passes into, like, with Wea waiting to go into an open field weren't played. I thought he was fine. It was not as good as you wanted him to be. You want him to finish that chance. I'm sure he wanted to finish that chance as well.
Was there a question?
If you have thoughts on Jesus Ferreira, you
can add him. I would say this. You've been rattling off the amount of games Ricardo Pepi hasn't scored in.
I said it once. No,
you have been saying it for a week constantly, and no point have you gotten in and said, but he created this chance for this teammate, and if it had fallen for them, it would have been a good performance. So you haven't really done that for him in this scenario, but you're bringing it out for Jesus Ferreira.
You go back. You go back and listen to the club and countries.
You signed him to the contract. I get it. No, I understand what you're saying. And I think, listen, in the first half, there was a ton of success. I thought Weston McKennie was phenomenal. I thought Wea was good as well. Like, the U.S. found opportunities in space. Taylor Twellman pointed it out on the broadcast of a moment when Jesus Ferreira dropped deep to help pick up the ball. And no one filled the space centrally when the U.S. was able to break out and attack. That should have been Pulisic. And it felt like if you had an idea of playing Ferreira to help Pulisic and Wea get in to goal-scoring situations and pull center backs out, that it probably should have been something that the entire team knew and not just Jesus Ferrer, because it didn't feel like anyone was in place to take advantage of the spots that Jesus Ferrer opened up.
Christian Pulisic on the left side.
Is that Christian Pulisic talk then?
So.
Is that what you're pointing fingers at?
We could have that discussion.
I mean, so the whole point of playing a false nine, and while I agree with you, Wiebe, that Ferrero, other than missing the sitter, was really, really good. I still don't love the false nine. That said, like, he did open up. Oh my God, Panama just hit the woodwork. Whew. He did open up space for those darting runs into the channels from the wingers, and Pulisic just didn't make them. He constantly, when he plays for the U.S., it's like he feels the weight of that number 10 and he thinks everything has to run through him. So he's checking back to the ball, like literally getting into Anthony Robinson's way. And like they clatter.
I thought he got hurt on that.
Yeah,
I mean, I was like, oh my God, are you kidding me? This is how it would happen.
But if you look at his touch map, like, he does not create any width and he does not create any depth. He's just kind of like hanging out there, inverting every single time. And then when he gets on the ball, he's still doing the same thing that got him hurt against Honduras 4 months ago. Like, he's going to invert and he's going to dribble right at three defenders with the ball on his feet. And he's going to get hacked. And okay, you win some fouls, but like it's not the best, most efficient soccer. And in the first half especially, it clogged everything up for the U.S. because you want your false nine to drop off the line and bring those center backs with them. Bring at least one with them. That creates those channels for darting off-ball runs that can stretch a defense vertically. And Pulisic just does not do that when he plays at left wing. And like Berhalter talked about it in post game. He talked about it at halftime, saying that Christian's coming back too deep, and he talked about it post game, and that's why Pulisic came, was subbed out. And it's something that he's got to solve. I think the solution is to, and I've written this a million times, is to play Pulisic on the right wing. He's always been better on the right. I think he plays a simpler game. I think he plays a lot more like Weah did tonight. And Weah, you can play him at left wing and he will still create width and depth and he will make those runs. Weah's whole thing is that he makes spectacular off-ball runs. His timing is so good no matter where on the field you put him. So put him at left wing and have him, play the same type of game. And put Pulisic at right wing, where he just has always played simpler, more dangerous soccer. I think it's a mentality thing for him. When he's playing inverted, he just feels like he's got to be messy, and he's not. And like, he spends a lot of time killing attacks for the U.S. He touched the ball 30 times in the first half. He turned it over 15.
Is he a lock? I mean, he's Christian Pulisic. He has built up some political will and some sporting will and some,
Costa Rica won, by the way.
It's full time. Brian Ruiz, legend, 65th minute. So that narrows the gap here in the middle. Panama not as locked in, shall we say, into that fourth spot. 14 points. Right now, Costa Rica 12. And then, of course, you have the U.S., Mexico, and Canada above. Do you have to start Christian Pulisic against Canada? In your biggest games, with the biggest stakes,
I would start him on the right wing. Timothy Weah had injuries. He hasn't played 90 in a while. I don't think you play Timothy Weah unless it's like a 10-minute cameo, at the end of the game. So he's not starting. Aaronson didn't look sharp, but okay, start Aaronson at left wing. He's been better there than I think Pulisic has. And start Pulisic on the right wing. Simplify the game for him so that he could just go straight. And if he could get the edge, hit a pullback to the penalty spot. And if it's Anthony Robinson, coming up the left-hand side with the ball on his foot, he's going to try to cross it to the back post. Pulisic is great at those box-arriving runs at the back post. That's it. Make it a very linear game for Christian Pulisic. Yes, I absolutely start him, not at left wing.
And you start him because, one, you won today. So he has value in the team. And even those bad moments, he's drawing foul. He's drawing attention, which is part of the frustrating thing is like, he has gravity even when he's not giving you a good performance. Can you use it properly? And can the players around him use the gaps that it allows? And the other thing is the ceiling of this team exists with Pulisic playing well for them. There are a lot of really good players in this group. There are a lot of really good players coming through that are American, right? Kevin Paredes is the next one. Daryl DK. Like there's a ton. We can name 1,000. Well, not 1,000. But it's starting to get there.
Feels like 1,000.
Just Danny Leyva by himself. Yeah. But
we're more of an 8-digit league. Like, that's the way we operate these days. So bring your best off.
Well, that's, I had to fill the quota on how many players I had to say. So, but you need Pulisic. And I think that's for Greg Berhalter. That's for the team. That's for the American public. Whatever you want to say it is for, he's talented. He's an elite soccer player. He needs to be able, you need to find a way to get the best out of him with this group. The way he played today and versus Honduras and in some of these, there was a segment, I think it was in, this is going back a lot, like 2009, where Clint Dempsey thought every time we played a good team, he had to come and draw fouls constantly. And part of what I think Bob Bradley got was, as he got Michael Bradley to fill that role centrally, Dempsey became that wide forward. And that's where it felt like he was the star, but then the U.S. figured out how to use him as that star. You feel it with Pulisic, as Doyle said, there's a weight on his shoulders, and he feels like he has to come in and touch the ball as many times as possible and be as central as possible and get running downhill at players. But he doesn't do it in isolated areas where he can be comfortable. He's always doing it centrally when he's surrounded by players. And I like the idea that Doyle has of one, if he wants to be come towards his right foot, put him out wide right. Also give him Dest around him who can give you options, because Anthony Robinson can only do one thing. But Dest can come inside. He can drop off. He can give you the overlapping run, whatever it is. Now, they both have to defend, which is part of the challenge of what you have. And it's Sam Adekube and Junior Hoylett and Tejan Buchanan. It could be some danger in that.
I don't think Dest starts. I don't Probably think Dest not. is a road qualifier type of guy.
He's not a, but, you're not a roadie. All right, Serginho.
He's not a Tim Hortons guy at all.
Let's get you in the comfy confines, all right?
So it'll be interesting, but for Greg Berhalter, you have no choice. You have to find something with him because the option is not just Christian Pulisic is a super sub for the U.S. men's national team.
You guys want to talk Anthony Robinson? Jedi Robinson. That's two goals for him. One road goal in Honduras, San Pedro Sula. So yeah.
You gotta explain the Jedi thing, because I literally thought it was just his Twitter handle. I
don't have the full explanation here other than that's his nickname. That's what he wants to be called. That's what he's been called, you know, exclusively for a long time.
The quote was, it's weird to hear people call me Anthony. I'm only used to being called Jedi.
I feel like he said since he was 5 or 6, that's just what people called him. I don't know, man. If he wants to be called Jedi, who are we to say no? If whatever you want to be called.
I'm not saying no.
He is Jedi from now on, which is, I mean, that's pretty cool.
Are you guys big Star Wars
not
fans?
Not really, no. See, that was before my time. I was born after all that. But
Weeby, Star Wars has been constantly on now for the last 40 years.
I was thinking of the old stuff, you know, the Return of the Jedi and whatnot. That's back in the old days. What'd you think of
Weeby's not a Book of Boba Fett.
Yeah, I haven't, not yet.
That's what he said.
Nobody is. Nobody is.
Really, nobody is.
Savage.
I've thought about the Mandalorian, but can't get Mindy into that one, so we're still struggling along.
I work for a guy, by the way, one of the places I work, my producer, his name is Jedi.
Is Jedi. I've this asked, is legal.
Well, no, they say, I say, hi, I'm David. He says, hi, I'm Jedi. And I like kind of looked around, and then I asked the play-by-play guy I was working with. He's like, yeah, he's Jedi. And I was like, well, what's his actual name? Not a single person knows. And I've now worked with him for years. Everyone else has worked with him longer. No one knows. Not an indication like, well, it's Johnny, but we call him Jedi. Nothing. So
I mean, once you become part of the order, life. That's a way of life. That's the way it goes. Look, he's direct. He's quote unquote up and down, as they might say in England. But he's pretty effective.
Chalk on his boot.
He's pretty effective in and around the 18-yard box. Like, it's a good finish on a ball bouncing across to him. He almost had another one where he cuts inside on the right.
Every time he comes in field for one of these moments, there's so much attention on everyone else. When he comes in, you've got Pulisic, Way, and Ferreira in the box. You've got Weston McKennie making runs. There's so much attention going on that when he does make the decision to come off the wing and come in field, he's almost always open and getting an opportunity. And that's what we've seen with the two goals. Balls bouncing through, balls going over the head as the opposition fullback has to follow Pulisic or whoever the wide winger is inside, and him reading those moments and taking advantage. Now, he doesn't do it a ton, which there's probably a positive there if it comes out of nowhere and it's not planned for. The negative is it feels like you could even get more opportunities like this. And then he's just been really calm with his chances. He had another chance in this one. I think Dest came in field and set him up, and he curled one and it just went straight into the arms of the goalkeeper.
Been a while since we talked about left back being a black hole. I know we don't have a ton of depth there, but it looks like Robinson is that guy. His celebration, I'm going to rant again. Stop with the flashing lights. The dude has center stage. And you're just taking that moment and you're just throwing a bunch of strobe lights on it. But he does the flip, the fake hammy. Were you guys tricked by the fake hammy? Did you fall for that? Did you notice that?
I did not notice it. I was clipping the highlight from Clip Pro as soon as it happened. But anyway,
And then he goes for the sprint out. I say let this man do the celebrations for everybody. I did enjoy that Ferreira had a little bit of a redemption moment, and not just with that one, with the little lay down to Yunus Musah as well to sort of set these up. But a big moment for Anthony Robinson, and he said afterwards, I've been dared to do this celebration for a while. Somebody dropped it on us like 2 or 3 years ago. My buddy said, you have to do it. I haven't done it with my Fulham goals. He finally got it done. How about Matt Turner, though? Not much to do in this game. But it seems like Greg Berhalter's in the news-breaking business. We all assumed Arsenal. Greg basically said afterwards, yeah, for a guy that's going to Arsenal, you know, it's a great story. Basically locked it down.
So my assumption is you already own the Arsenal kit. And you're just going to go to a local store and have them print the name on
the back?
This
is as old and tired as the Sporting Kansas City one. It's just, you know.
You're a gooner?
It's a different Weeby. It's not me. It's Joel Weeby. It's my brother. He's locked in on this one.
It's W-E-E-B-E? It's Weeby?
W-I before E in this case, for sure. But it's a big moment. It's a big moment for U.S. soccer. It's a bigger moment for Matt Turner, obviously. Matt, it's an incredible story. You've been banging us in the head with a cast iron skillet for a while about this guy. Before everybody was crowing about him, what do you think of just the story overall within a U.S. soccer perspective, just a sports a life perspective?
The story is cool, and it's similar to Tejan's story in that neither guy was a part of the youth national teams, neither guy came up through the typical systems. I mean, Matt Turner is even a little bit more obscure than Tejan because Tejan at least went to an ACC school. Matt Turner came to soccer late and only went to Fairfield, go Stags. But it's a great story. But it's why I will always care about college soccer and the super draft to a pretty good degree, because Metro was even drafted, but still, like, he was available. There, like, in countries as big as the U.S. and Canada, there will always be guys who are missed by the national team programs. Just like guys who develop late, guys who just aren't seen by the right people. You know, I think both countries struggle to identify players from communities that are too urban or too rural or too ethnic. Not that Matt Turner necessarily, you know, checks any of those boxes, but like it college soccer is always going to be a viable path because of that lack. And there's no way to cover the entire, you know, 370 million people between Canada and the US just with pro teams. So it's fantastic. The Revs did a great job with both these guys. Now Matt Turner gets to live the dream. It looks like it's happening in summer for him. Like Weeby, he's apparently a poser who became an Arsenal fan at some point early in his career, so that's even better for him. I hope he plays. It's cool. Like, if this happened the year after a World Cup, when there were like no meaningful national team games for a couple of years, I'd be like completely, you know, in for it. The fact that it's happening the year of a World Cup, and I don't think he's going to start over Ramsdale unless Ramsdale completely goes in the crapper, it leaves me a little worried. I like, you know, my players to play soccer. I also like watching American players play. So it's tough with him and Zach Steffen, Bo, and I guess Ethan Horvath at places where they don't play. But at the same time, like, it's a once in a lifetime chance to make a dream move. And, he's faced longer odds before. And I think he's good enough to play at one of the top four clubs in the EPL. And it turns out so does Arsenal.
Maybe the back issues are contagious. Maybe Ramsdale will get a little bit of case of the aches, give him an opportunity to start. But I mean, how much concern do you have about that? Not having two guys who are playing, we assume. How big a deal is that?
Yeah, let's revisit that. After the move is official, because it sounds like he's not moving till the summer, and we've got so much to cover. We don't, like, it's not great, but like, whatever. It's a conversation we're going to be having for the next 10 months.
Is this his job though? Like, it just seems like injury issues just keep failing Zach Steffen.
It doesn't matter.
It you don't think it
like
matters?
Every time Zach Steffen gets healthy, he's the starter. No. All proof is that every time Zach Steffen's available, Greg Berhalter wants him on the field. That's all we've been shown over the last year or so. And so it seems like that will continue to be the case. He was unavailable today. So Matt Turner started. That's great. This is also why you have depth. And you have players that can perform at a starter's level. Greg Berhalter wants Zach Steffen starting for his national team. That seems to be where we're at. Now, maybe Matt Turner goes to Arsenal, works on his feet, gets to a different level, and maybe that changes. But it doesn't feel like that's going to change right now. And I don't think that's a knock. I mean, you have to pick one of them. And every single time we watch them play, there are positives and negatives on both sides. They're both fantastic goalkeepers, and I think in general, the U.S. is better for having both of them in the pool, but there are negatives on both sides the way they play. Now, Matt Turner was fine with his feet today. I don't think they play back and play through him as often as they would have if Zach Steffen was in that game. I think you saw it a couple of times, especially the awkward spacing along the right side when Dest got high and Zimmerman got the ball alongside the box or just ahead of the box trying to play out. Zimmerman's not super comfortable in those spots. I think if it's Steffen, they push Zimmerman even wider and they play back into Steffen's feet in moments where they did it. So, but at the same time, Matt Turner doesn't let in soft goals. You have pros and cons with both. And as Doyle said, I know. I probably shouldn't have said that coming out of the last 6 weeks he had in MLS. But as Doyle said, we're going to talk about this for 10 months, probably 5 years.
I know this guy got Selena takes a spot from everybody. Just give him a couple years.
Damian Losh, shout out Austin.
MMA, any thoughts on the midfield? We haven't really touched much of that other than to say, hey, good first half from Weston McKennie.
McKennie's first half was great. Like, that was, I don't want to say the best, but like, it was close to the best I've ever seen him play for the national team. Second half, he was so sloppy. Like, a big part of the game kind of getting away from the U.S. over the final 20 minutes was McKennie like just becoming a turnover machine. Whereas in the first half, he was so locked in. It was good and it was bad because he showed you the ceiling, but he reminded you also that he's still, he's not quite in his prime and he's not quite at the point where he's going to go out there every game and be the focal point for 90 minutes. Musa, though, he's my favorite player in the pool. And he wasn't great tonight either. I thought Jermaine Jones actually said it at halftime of the ESPN broadcast. He was dropping too deep. He was getting outside of that diamond just to get on the ball instead of staying in between the lines and like making them a little bit more compact, which then opens up the flanks for the wingers and the fullbacks. So he was a little too eager to get on the ball, but he fixed it in the second half. And then like every time he touches a ball, I feel like something good is going to happen. Like he's going to advance it 50 yards upfield, either, you know, with a 1-2 or, you know, a nice pass or just dribble three guys. I love this guy. He's amazing.
We also know the area he likes to pick up is where Weston McKennie was being successful in that first half. And so I think there was kind of a give and take because Musa loves to be in between the right back, and the center forward in that area, pick up the ball, glide to his right at times, beat people on the half turn and go centrally other times. That's where Weston McKennie was living in that first half when he was being successful. And so Musa had to come off that move towards the left side. And then, as Doyle mentioned, it felt like then he's trying to find the game a little bit. He's left less comfortable. He's less sure of his positioning and when he's going to get the ball and where he's going to get his touches from. So he kind of sort of floated in and out of it. And then Tyler Adams, you still need a level of improvement in terms of the build out. And he had one mistake in the end of the second half where he was lucky that the U.S. wasn't tied 1-1. I mean, he just gave the ball away at the top of the 18. But he had other ones where he comes in and makes incredible. I think it was the first 2 minutes of the game. He comes in and makes a slide tackle going towards his own goal, covering for Dest and Zimmerman out of midfield. And he's still the best in this pool at closing space, at covering ground in midfield. And if the U.S. ever actually presses high, probably would be the best there. It's just, you know, as Greg says at halftime of every game, we're just working on it.
What is messed up with the press? I mean, Greg would say the spacing between midfield and forwards. Doyle, what do you think is off in that sense?
I think that was a big part of it, yeah. I also think it seems like there's more thinking and less just playing. And I think we saw it at times with Tyler being weirdly resistant to playing an early vertical ball. There was one, I think, midway through the second half, and it was like he got on the run and he did a guy, and he's, you know, not in the open field, but like he's got a pocket of space and driving the ball forward, and it's just like, release the ball forward. And he didn't do it. He took like three extra touches, and it's like, you play for RB Leipzig, man. Like, your whole existence is playing the ball forward as early as possible. And it looks like there's a little bit of overthinking there, I think, especially from Adams in this game.
I think there's also, to be a great pressing team, there has to be perfect fluidity in knowing where the next person supposed to be and where your other teammate's supposed to be. And as exciting as all of this is, I said it in possession as well, this still is not a team that knows each other that well and has had that long to work together, right? Walker Zimmerman wasn't in this team. Chris Richards had never been with this group before because of being in Europe and all those things and then COVID. Serginho Dest knows some players from being a youth player. Yunus Musa never played a youth game with the U.S. So you're looking at a lot of players who don't know each other that well. And I think when you look at national teams that are great at pressing, and I think you sometimes have to put great in quotes because it's different than what you're seeing at the club level, it takes years, right? It's Bielsa with Chile. It's not 6 months in. It's 3 years in after a tournament and a qualifying cycle.
Dude, we're three years into the Berhalter era, though.
It's a COVID era. And on the field today, there was one field player over the age of 24.
Yeah, that's
so. It's a young group, and it was not a time period where you had a normal cycle of here's this qualifying games, here's these friendlies, here's the Nations League. Like the Nations League and the Gold Cup were on top of each other in the same summer instead of having two full summers to work with.
Injuries to Adams, injuries to Pulisic kept them out of a lot of sort of moments that the whole group could be together. Yeah,
yeah.
But we all want to see more, right?
Yeah, I would love that's for still, the U.S. That's still, and that's why we're these
gosh, it's fine. You know, hey, we got 3 points at home, but it's just fine. It's not the best. But look, Sunday's a big day. U.S. going to Canada. Thought David Goss might be going to Canada, to Tim Hortons Field. The legendary Tim
Are
Hortons
you going?
Field. I thought he might. No. 2:05 p.m.
My tickets got taken back, and then I had to rebuy them. Because they had to limit the amount of people that are allowed, and it's the whole thing. I'm going to be with you, Doyle.
That's
in 20
great.
Years,
I staying wait. Home.
In 20
to talk
years,
to you.
If you have a conversation, will you be there? Like, oh, yeah, I was almost there. I could have been there.
Oh, 100% I went to that game. Yeah, yeah, for
Tim
sure.
Tim Way and Jonathan David are having a good time, apparently. They've been talking about this for a long time. They say this is the first team and the second team in the octagonal right now. This is the return from Nashville. Big draw for Canada. How jacked up are you about this particular game? I mean, Doyle, you said, hey, Canada, you're in the World Cup, but you haven't said that about the U.S. Is that just because it's the fear, right? You were talking about Canada. Like, you know that edge, so you would never say it out loud. Not until the – for the U.S., it's not until the end of the line that we'll
No, I'm a Canada fan. Yeah. I've been rooting for Canada for decades, Weeby. I just think Canada's played better, right? So that's why I said that about them. But this U.S. team, I know they haven't lost a lot of games. It seems to me like they could still figure out how to lose some games. That said, I'm weirdly not all that jacked up for this game, because for both teams, the third game of this window is like weirdly more important. Maybe less so for Canada, but they already have such, you know, a nice little cushion there. If the U.S. beats Honduras on Wednesday, I don't want to say it doesn't matter what happened in this game, but like 6 points from this group or from this series of qualifiers just about gets it done. So I'm interested in it. It should be a good game. I'm really intrigued by what John Herdman might have up his sleeve. But it doesn't feel like an edge of my seat type of thing.
I said it going into the Mexico game. There are very few of these high quality games that matter. And the way that it will be played, I think, will be different than what we see in a normal CONCACAF World Cup qualifier. So from a U.S. point of view, can these players perform and win in a game like that? Can these players, you know, play against players of the quality of Canada? And I'm not sure. Canada might come out and not try and take the ball, but I don't think that will be true. So can the U.S. play against the ball, which they have not been able to do or had to do a ton in World Cup qualifying? So I think it's a different experience. It's a different challenge that you're looking at. It's one that probably projects more towards what a World Cup game will look like. On the flip side for Canada, like it's happening, right? It's been a slow, steady of like, you can win that game. We'll talk about it as a country, but we don't really care. Okay, you won. You beat Haiti to get into the next round of World Cup qualifying. We'll be excited, but we're not going to get too excited. And it feels like it's been building for a really long time. The Mexico game, I think, was the final like explosion that could happen. But if you beat the U.S. on a Sunday afternoon on national TV in Canada to pretty much clinch your spot at the World Cup, that could be a huge moment. So I think for Canada, it's what we've talked about for like 9 months, gaining the confidence back of the country, gaining the fandom back, saying it's okay to believe in us. It's okay to jump on board. And it sucks that Alphonso Davies won't be there, because I think he's been the face of a lot of this, but it also gives a chance for Tejon Buchanan and Kyle Larin and Richie Larea to become, you know, national faces, and for Drake to text them as well. To hang out.
Come on, we need to get the crew in the group chat, Drake. This is not a 1v1 situation. All right, get them all in here. Do you think Greg Berhalter will rotate heavily, Doyle?
I don't think he'll rotate as heavily as he did against Panama, but I think I'll put my money on four new starters.
Miles,
I think Miles Robinson. Miles Robinson comes in. Reggie Cannon comes
Miles
in.
Miles comes in for Chris Richards. You would be taking the one player who's in season out.
He looked shaky tonight. I'll take Reggie Cannon over Sergiño Dest.
No, you don't think it's Yedlin?
I don't.
Okay.
I don't. I mean, that might be wrong. Either way, Sergiño Dest is not starting this game. I think Pepe comes in at center forward.
Three.
And I think Aronson starts for Weah.
And you think the three midfield stays? Midfielders stay. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
I agree with Doyle. I think Yedlin will start, but otherwise I agree with all those moves. And then I guess Zach Steffen's a question mark. If he's available, as I said, I don't think
Greg, he's not even him, here, right? He's in England.
Yeah, he hasn't
I thought he was in Ohio.
This is a three-game window. For Matt Turner, I think.
Okay.
Just, you know, that's what I was saying about the bad back. Like, sometimes these things, you know, they take a while to heal. They take a while to heal.
Dude, you're telling me about it. I haven't been able to move for 2 days.
Nice. We're all suffering here. But nobody at the top suffering in CONCACAF. Wins for the U.S., wins for Canada. That keeps Canada atop that octagonal. U.S. in second on 18 points. Mexico, which we haven't talked about yet, coming from behind. Tin Man Jamaica, Damian Lowe, Inter Miami's Damian Lowe. By the way, according to the ESPN feature that was really good on DeAndre Yedlin, Miami's DeAndre Yedlin as well.
Just in the middle of the article.
I was like, I thought that was that confirmed, but it is now pretty much confirmed in that sense as well. Red card for Damian Lowe, but Jamaica get a goal. And at 10 men, they tried to play, and it didn't work out in the end for them. Mexico pick up two. It feels like that top three is becoming more and more locked in. The next two games in this particular window will tell us a lot. Match day 10 and 11, and then we'll finish it out in March. Any final thoughts, guys, before we get out of here? Of course, we'll be back for pregame and postgame on Sunday. Pregame on Twitter Spaces, as always, and then postgame in the same spots, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube.
I just want to ask you, Weeby, are you jacked for Sunday's game?
I've always
put it on a platter for us. Yeah. We never hear how Andrew Weeby feels.
Well, I got to tell you, number one, super jacked it's during nap time on a Sunday. That is a huge win for the brand.
Wait, do you mean your nap
would
time?
Would normally be my nap time, but in this case, I'm making a special sacrifice for you guys and for everybody else out there. Just watch this game. No, I'm really excited. I think that the Canada story and the vibes and the quality of player and the way it relates back to MLS and what we're doing, what I'm doing every single day, which is watching, thinking about, caring about North American soccer, is just this behemoth. It just changes everything for the development of talent in this continent, for like the balance of power in CONCACAF, to have another team in this region that could go to the World Cup and you legitimately look at it and say they could make real noise. And to have it be Canada, and I don't know if you have the numbers right in front of you, Dave, but like just to think back through that and the generations that have lived through, I mean, abject repeat failure and are now having this moment, just that on the Canada side, let alone the fact that I'm an American, a U.S. national team fan. This is a huge game. It's a big test. I always want our guys to play well. I always want our team to play well. I want to be inspired by what they do. And these are the times that you can do that. So there are a lot of times in this little soccer world they're in that I can feel jaded, where I'm like, golly, man, we do this all the time. Like, how many soccer games have I watched? How many have I seen? But this one, to me, like, we don't know how many more of these we're going to get. How many octagonals there are going to be, if any. 2026 will not be like this. So every time we get that opportunity, and that opportunity is now Canada first in the octagonal and the U.S. trying to pass them with the level of players that are now on both teams, with the coaching like wrinkles that John Herdman has thrown and that Greg can throw and often does at halftime. I mean, I just think they're two really good soccer minds. That's fun. That's exciting. That's a progression of our soccer culture, of the soccer world that we live in, that wasn't anywhere close to this 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, even, let alone a decade or 20 years. So I'm jacked.
Well, dude.
I'm jacked. Yeah.
Shot over the bow of Benito Florio right there.
There were some not so pretty times in the near past for Canada and for the U.S. too. Like, you know, yeah, like, let's not take this for granted.
Well, that's why Doyle keeps saying, like, oh, they're in, blah, blah, blah. It's like, I don't feel confident that the U.S. is in the World Cup yet because the rug's been pulled out.
Can I tell you the odds? According to Global Football, who are a bunch
of... Hold on. Let me guess. It's on percentages right now? Mm-hmm. I'm going to guess the U.S. are 87%.
You're low.
Wow.
Really?
93.
You're so...
Wow. 98.8%
from... Wow. The U.S. 99.4% from Mexico.
Knock on wood.
99.5% for Canada.
This feels like a 27-3 situation. I feel like we're about to get screwed.
Yeah, I mean, look, do I think we'll go to the World Cup? Yes. Does that mean I'm going to be less jacked up for this particular game on Sunday, 3:05 p.m. Eastern? Because I always do Central Time, so you heard me say 2:05. 3:05 p.m. Eastern, Paramount Plus, Universal. I am. I wish that Alphonso Davies was there. I wish that Eustachio was there. I wish that Christian Pulisic was in better form. But so you can't get everything you wish for, man.
I'll probably get in trouble for saying this if Canada doesn't qualify, but this would be a fun team in a World Cup.
Yeah.
Like, has match winners. John Herdman has months to prepare for three specific opponents just to get 4 points or 5 points to get through. Like, this is the type of team that's like a fun group, similar, well, probably not similar, but like what we saw with like Iran in the last World Cup, what we've seen with Croatia. Like this could be a fun team in a World
Meanwhile, Cup. The U.S., what, they had the youngest team in called up for qualifiers in this window? Is that right?
And then we're going to dump them all. None of those guys go to the World Cup. We bring a whole new group in. Cade Cowell on the left, or Cade Cowell on the right, Kevin Paredes on the left, Josh Atencio in the middle.
No one born before 2003. So Pepe is there, Yunus Musa, Gio Reyna, they're out.
That's why Lucci's
25-year-old geezers, get out of here. You guys are old. You're creaky. This is a young man's game.
Next generation.
It's just exciting. It's exciting for both these teams to be at this level and to, you know, just to see what happens on Sunday. Who's going to be the star? Who's going to have a moment? Who's going to, you know, cement themselves in national lore? That could very well happen for any one of these Canadian players. That could very well happen for these U.S. players as we build into a World Cup. And knock on wood again, I know those percentages and go there. That's where we're at in the octagonal right now. Canada first in the octagonal, U.S. second, Mexico is third, Panama, and then Costa Rica. Any thoughts, any comments, anything ahead of Sunday, 401-206-0MLS, extratime@mlssoccer.com. We'll be back for the pregame show on Twitter Spaces when the lineups come out for the U.S. and Canada, and we will wrap it up afterwards. Thanks for joining us, whether live or on demand. Subscribe to Extra Time wherever you listen to podcasts. You can watch us on YouTube as well every single week on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Are you kidding me? I've been doing this for 10 years on Mondays and Thursdays. It's late. We're out. Peace. Adios, everybody. We'll be right back.